You are listening to the Meet Us in Buellton podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network.
Welcome back, everyone. We're so excited about today's episode. I'm your co-host, Kathy Vreeland.
And I'm your other co-host, Mackenzie. Today we have a special guest, Mark Mendenhall from Mendenhall's Museum of Gasoline Pumps and Petroleum. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. We're so happy to have you today. We just want to start off with a little introduction. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Mark Mendenhall. I'm the owner of Mendenhall's Museum of Gasoline Pumps and Petrolena. It's been a long history to put this museum together. It was my dad's vision and years ago, and a lot of history with it.
Awesome. Well, that's great. We're so excited to dive in and learn about the history and learn about why people should come visit your museum when they're in Buellton. I'm personally really excited to learn about why we should visit a museum about gasoline pumps. I've looked at several and they seem really unique, and I'm sure each of them have a really cool story to tell. So Kathy, as usual, we'll just have you chime in with other questions, but let's go ahead and get started. Can you first just give us kind of an introduction about the museum, how it was started, and maybe a little bit of the history?
Sure. I lived in Buellton all my life. I lived in Buellton when there was 200 people. Now there's 6,200. So my roots are in town here. And early on, and back in the early 50s, my dad had a service station on the north end of town here. It was a Ridgefield station. And in 57, he came to the south end of town and bought the property. And it was a signal station, and he brought the Richfield products down here. And at that time, Highway 101 went through the center of town, and pretty much Buellton was all service town USA, and it still is today. But it was all full of service stations and restaurants and motels, and it was kind of a halfway stop between LA and in San Francisco for people to stop and get their car fixed and get gas and spend the night and stuff. So my dad had the service station, like I said, from 57 to 78. And he was an avid collector back then. And he liked to collect road signs and gas pumps and globes. And so he started collecting early on, and it just kind of blossomed from there. When he sold the station in 78, he went out on the road collecting, and he was like the original American picker. And he'd be gone 4 or 5 months and come back with a trailer load of gas pumps and signs and stuff. And I had nowhere to display them. And fortunately, through the years, I was able to build all the buildings to display all of our memorabilia and the gas pumps and signs and race cars and street rods and everything that go along with it. Originally, the museum was our wrecking yard lot when we had the service station here in town, because we towed for the Highway Patrol and AAA. And we used to tow in abandoned vehicles and broken down vehicles and wrecks. And so through the years, fortunately, we were able to build everything up and display all of our memorabilia.
Well, that's great. And that is so unique. I'm kind of interested, when your father went on these little trips or excursions, where was he finding the gasoline pumps? Just kind of all over, or mainly California?
Oh, pretty much all over the country. He would go out for 4 or 5 months, and he would hit different places. He went almost to every state and collecting. And back when he was collecting in the early 70s and 60s, you could get all this memorabilia for little or nothing. And today it's completely gone ballistic, with especially with American pickers and what goes on. But we have over 100 gas pumps. I had 200 at one time. And I have like 2,500 signs, which are gasoline signs and road signs and porcelain signs. And we have like 1,500 license plates. And I have over 400 of the globes that went on top of the old gas pumps that are up and lit, and street rods and race cars. And we grew up in a racing community. And also the Dry Lakes Racing Hall of Fame is here too. So there's a lot for people to see when they come here. And all the fastest people in the world, guys and gals, have come to our place in Little Podunk, Buellton, to be inducted in the Hall of Fame, which is pretty prestigious for Little Buellton. And next year is going to be the 24th year that we've done the induction ceremony. So just like the Hall of Fame of baseball or football or whatever, the Dry Lakes Racing Hall of Fame is on those same lines.
Mark, that is really neat. Can you tell us a little bit more about that land speed racing and what the qualifications are to be inducted into that?
Sure. Years ago, my dad and a bunch of guys got together, all racers, and they had a barbecue. And they said, we need to do something to recognize the Dry Lakes racing community, because everybody else has their own Hall of Fame for, like you said, baseball, golf, football, whatever, basketball. So they decided they were going to start the Hall of Fame for the land speed racers. And it just kind of grew from there. And how people get inducted is there's a company called, well, not a company, but it's the Southern California Timing Association, SCTA. And basically they put on the racing events at El Mirage, Dry Lakes, and at Bonneville. And that consists of like 12 different racing clubs. And all those racing clubs, every time that we're going to have a gas up, we send out flyers to them. And a gas up is what we call our Dry Lakes Racing Hall of Fame event. We send flyers out to all these clubs, and then they decide who they would like to have inducted in the Hall of Fame. And then we bring back all the information to our club, and we sort it out and figure out who's going to be voted on to be put into the Hall of Fame. And so that each club has so many votes, and the existing Hall of Fame members all get a vote to see who gets inducted into the Hall of Fame. So the last event that we had two of the fastest cars in the world. We had Danny Thompson's Streamliner, who's Mickey Thompson's son. He broke his dad's record at 448. And we had Vesco's Terminator Streamliner, and they went 503. So to have those two vehicles here was pretty prestigious.
Wow. Yeah, that's an honor for you, I'm sure, to be part of that. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and it still is. We've got to try to keep it going. This COVID, it's kind of set us back a couple of years on doing our events, but we plan on doing one April next year for our 24th year.
Well, that's great. Kathy, have you ever been involved in any of these events or know much about it?
Yeah, so I've actually attended the Gas Up before, and I've been over to the museum to see these speed racers, the land racers. They're pretty amazing. And I mean, I think, Mark, some of them are even like fueled by jet power, aren't they, to go that speed? Or
sure. There's classes for everything from motorcycles and mopeds to electric cars to AA fuel engines to jet engines and turbos and diesel trucks. So there's a lot of different categories for people to break records in. And it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool to see. And it's amazing, because to see the compartments that they have to sit in some of these cars, I think I'd get claustrophobic. But anyhow, they're pretty cool. And to hear some of the speeds that they break, like Mark just mentioned, 400, 500 miles an hour on land, that's amazing. You know, that when you think about what a jet does when we're flying or whatever, but on land, to be riding in something that speed, it's pretty amazing. So
I agree. That's pretty incredible. What a unique sport to be a part of, too, because I don't know much about land speed racing. So that was really cool to learn about that. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
Kind of going back to your museum a little bit, is there anything specific that's memorable to you that your father collected or is there, or something that's your favorite at the museum?
Well, when my dad had, like I said, he had a Richfield station at the south end of town, and he had it for 25 years from 57 to 2008 or 1978. And in 78, at the same time, my wife and I went to the north end of town and leased the same service station from the same landowner, Bill Oliveira, at the time, and it was a Chevron station. So we had that for 25 years. So basically, gas and oil is in our blood. And because I pumped Richfield gas when I was a kid, that's kind of one of my favorite collectibles. And Atlantic merged with Richfield to become Atlantic Richfield in 1966. So at that time, we got all of our signage changed and everything to become an ARCO station instead of a Richfield. But Richfield is kind of my favorite collectible. And I do have a porcelain, 14-foot porcelain eagle neon sign in my yard. And I guess that would be my favorite sign. You know, I'm still collecting all the time. Collecting is a hobby that becomes an obsession. So you just, you know, I'm collecting all the time. I just bought some signs from a guy 4 or 5 days ago, actually. But it's just a lot of fun, and we've tried to keep everything going. We do a lot of events at our place other than the gas up. We, you know, do car clubs and motorcycle clubs, and we'll do birthday parties, class reunions, weddings, whatever reason to have an event there. And we just love showing people what history is with Petrolana.
That's great. And I'm super impressed on all the dates that you know just off the top of your head. That's really great. Speaking of the events, what kind of space is available for those who want to host an event?
Well, it just depends on what the event is and how many people. We like to try to keep it somewhere max of about 150 because parking's kind of a premium where we're at, but we'll accommodate whatever. I mean, we actually cater barbecues for some of our events. We don't barbecue for less than 40 people, but there's actually, when we have car clubs come in there, we've had like Austin clubs, Corvette clubs, different clubs, and a lot of times we'll bring their cars in and I can probably put about 25 regular American size vehicles in the complex at one time. So it really makes a really good photo shoot for the people that are bringing their cars and motorcycles in. But then we kind of clean out one building and put tables and chairs in there. And if, you know, for events for like birthday parties and that type of thing. And at night, it's pretty awesome at night because you're in your own ambiance. I have over 40 neon signs and it lights up like a circus at night. It's so cool. So, you know, most of the time we like to have our events at night for those type of events.
Well, that sounds like a really fun event to be a part of and a great photo op for all the cars and the people there participating. Mm-hmm. Kind of talking a little bit for our listeners, obviously we want them to come visit your museum and see all the wonderful things that you've collected, you and your father, over the years. Mm-hmm. From a visitor perspective, what's kind of the experience as you tour the museum?
Well, we do tours also daily, usually Monday through Friday. We like to do our tours between 10 and 2. All of our tours are a guided tour. They take about an hour and a half, and we charge $15 per person for our tours. And our collection is a little bit eclectic too, because it's not all gasoline memorabilia. We have a beer can collection. We have old music boxes and a lot of different stuff. I have some vehicles there that are unmolested. You know, I have a 23 Studebaker and a 30 Oakland that haven't been touched since for years and years and years. So there's a lot for everybody to see. It's not just a lot of times when people come in there, they talk to my wife about when she's doing tours and they say, you live in a giant man cave. And but pretty much, you know, if they bring their girlfriends and wives, there's stuff for them to see too. It's not just all gearhead stuff. So it's a lot of fun.
Great. What's been your experience, Kathy, when you've gone through the museum?
Oh gosh. You know, I think every time I go, I see something new and different that I didn't see the time before. So it's just a great collection. It's meticulously displayed. The way they have it displayed, it's just remarkable. I think it's like everything has its place. I don't know how Mark did it, but they've made it work. And it's just amazing how everything fits and it doesn't look cluttered or like a bunch of junk. It's really amazing to look at and take your time looking through all the different collections. And like he said, he has different things there to look at as well, and some antique pieces. And when you do the tour, it's the Mendenhall family taking you on a tour. And, you know, it's from their heart. This is their history, their past. And so they, you know, you really feel immersed in the whole experience when you're going through it, because they can speak so passionately about all of the pieces there. And they have the stories of how maybe it was collected or where it was from or how much it, you know, what they had to do to deal to get it there. So just a really an amazing experience for anybody to go through. If you know, like that, like Route 66 feel, you know, a little retro, the neon, like Mark said, at night, it's a whole different experience than what you see during the day, just because the glow of the neons and the signs are moving. They have like a great big 76 ball, like from a gas station that actually moves around. And, you know, just all the different experiences you can see. And matter where you look, you'll see something.
Well, that just painted a perfect picture. The neon signs, that sounds pretty cool. It kind of caught my attention when Kathy said there's a place for everything. It doesn't feel cluttered or anything. You are still collecting, Mark. So do you still have areas where you can place new things that you're finding?
Like I said, I just bought some signs from a guy the other day and I had to move some other signs around. Pretty much floor to ceiling and ceiling are full of signs and license plates and memorabilia. And so I have to move some stuff around, but I keep finding room and finding place to, and you have to figure that, you know, between my dad and I, there's over 80 years of collecting. So it's taken a massive amount of time to be able to display this stuff and try to put it up so it's not cluttered. And, but you know, that's the thing. I've had so many people that have come for tours and they've been back for the third or fourth time. And just like Kathy said, they see something they never saw before, because even though we're doing a guided tour, we don't let people just walk around and go through the place. The guided tour makes it more personal for one thing. And then they can get the history on how all this evolved and how it came together. And then they can see the passion that we have in it for, you know, putting it together.
Yeah, I personally like history. So that would be really fun for me to have someone walking me through, telling me the stories and really learning about the history of it and where these are coming from. I know we've kind of talked about this a little bit, Mark, but what's your favorite thing to collect? Is it the gasoline pumps, the globes, the signs?
Well, I like the neon signs, porcelain neon signs, and also flange signs. And a flange sign is like a sign that sticks out from the wall and you can see it from both sides, and they're kind of cool. And when my dad was collecting early on and we were putting the signs up, we didn't have room, so we were putting flange signs flat against the wall. Well, in the last couple of years, I've been pulling those off and displaying them differently so you could see both sides. And so that's kind of one of my favorite collectibles is flange signs and porcelain neon. So that's what I'm kind of looking for. And the globes, I have 600 globes. I have 400 of them that are up and lit. And these globes are made out of glass. So if we get the big earthquake, I'm going to be in trouble. But,
no.
You know, if you have a porcelain sign, say you have a $5,000 porcelain sign and you drop it on the ground, you have a $4,500 porcelain sign. If you have a $5,000 globe and you drop it on the ground, you've got a mess. So my dad, early on when he was collecting, he loved the globes, but you had to really be careful with them because they're so fragile. And especially today with what they're bringing for money, that you just got to be really careful. And fortunately, most of mine are all of them are screwed down, but that doesn't mean you get the big shaker and we could be in trouble. So, but if you're going to display your stuff and you're going to show your stuff, then you got to take that risk because insurance for that type of memorabilia is cost prohibitive.
Yeah, well, that would be a scary situation. I hope that doesn't happen because then we wouldn't be able to come see your cool museum.
Yeah.
And that would be a lot of years of hard work kind of gone away really quickly. So I hope that does not happen. Is it pretty difficult to kind of secure everything in place? Like you said, you've been hanging the signs differently so people can see them. What's kind of the process there, organizing everything into the museum?
Pretty much just going wall to wall and seeing what fits. And when I was hanging signs with my dad, he would draw them out on a piece of paper at night. And the next day we'd hang signs and I'd be there for 3 hours hanging signs. And he'd have one here and one there. And we got to move that one over a half an inch to the left or an inch up or whatever. And now I can take a whole bundle of signs, throw them on the ground and put them up on the wall and don't even use a tape measure. So there's probably a couple million screws, you know, in the place that put up all the signs and memorabilia. And, you know, just I go around, you know, all the time and say, well, here I've got some signs that are behind some gas pumps that are really cool and you can't see them. And so I, you know, try to move around and put the best signs up and, you know, display the ones, because back in the day we were just hanging signs and now it's more about the quality and get the best signs for their appearance and stuff.
Well, it sounds like you have a great process down. A question that I kind of thought of for Kathy is there anything to you that stood out when you've taken a tour?
There's so much. You know, I think part of it, this is their backyard. You know, the Mendenhalls live here at the museum, so this is their home as well. And just that they open it up and share it with the community is pretty cool. But definitely just how everything is so organized, and when you're looking at these different collections, I too love the neon lights. I think it's so cool at night to see that lit up. And I don't know if one thing, the 76 ball, you can't help see it. It's just so big and it's there. And when it's moving, it's pretty cool. I don't know if one thing stands out, just they have so much stuff everywhere that you're just drawn to so many different things to look at while you're there, but it's definitely worth a visit. If you've never been, and if you're interested in some of that history and past and that Route 66 kind of feel, it's definitely a must see when you're in Buellton.
I love that. And I can tell that even for Mark, that's one of his favorites is the neon signs.
Yeah. So Mark, tell us a little bit about how people can actually book a tour with you or where they can go to kind of check out the museum online or how they reach you.
Well, we have a website and it's mendenhallmuseum.com, and they can go on there and see a lot of our history and cars. There's a photo gallery and, you know, we sell items too. We sell t-shirts and hats and different stuff. So, I mean, but basically the best way to book a tour would be to call me, and I take tours and different events by appointment only because we live there. And we, like I said, we try to do our tours between 10 and 2, like Monday through Friday. And we set up a time that's convenient for us and for them. And we do like that hour and a half guided tour. So we do have brochures. We get most of our advertising through just word of mouth and TripAdvisor and Google. You can Google mendenhallmuseum.com and go from there. But the best way to book a tour would be to call me at 805-689-2402. And I pretty much book all the tours and we can go from there.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Mark. I have absolutely loved learning more about this very unique museum and kind of the atmosphere that it brings to Buellton. One question we like to ask all of our guests is, what's your favorite thing about Buellton?
Well, I think, you know, living here all my life when I was a kid, I could go down to the river and fish and hunt. And I had a car when I was 10 years old, and it was like the small town character. I could hitchhike to Solvang when I was 10 years old to go bowling, and you, 10 cars would go by in an hour and you knew 8 of them. But, you know, that's changed and you can't change progress. So, I mean, we've got bigger, but I think Buellton is still Servicetown USA no matter what. I mean, we're still taxed based by our service stations and our motels. And so we're a destination, you know, with the RV park across the street and the Ostrich Farm and our place. There's so many things to do and wine tasting that just Buellton is unique that way. And fortunately, we have a really good chamber and visitors bureau that really promotes Buellton and keeps us going.
Well, that's great. And that's a great chime in for Kathy. She does do a wonderful job and we're grateful for her.
She does.
Well, thank you so much again, Mark. We've really enjoyed the discussion. Yeah. Definitely a bucket list item when you're in Buellton. And we'll make sure to, in the show notes, to leave the information about scheduling a tour as far as their website goes and Mark's phone number and everything. Thank you so much for joining, everyone. Don't forget to leave us a rating and review, and we'll see you next time. This has been another episode of the Meet Us in Buellton podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, hosted by Mackenzie Felstead and produced by Relic.